At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyo from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Greg Oliar. We love Greg Oliar on Start Me Up. He is the author of Rough Beast, the author of The Prevail Substack. He's also a podcaster and the co-host of The 5-8 on YouTube. We always have a good time, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Greg Oliar. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you, because I love you. I love, you know, when you said yes to the show, I was like, I just felt so relaxed. It's like, you're such an easy guest.
Thank you. I know how that is, though. Like, oh yeah, I don't have to worry about, you know, we already know each other.
Yeah.
It's not going to be awkward, probably. I mean, it could be.
And you're a talker and I'm a talker and you're so fucking smart. So oh my God, there's so many things going on. But before we get into politics and everything, I just want to know, how are you doing? How's your life? What's going on? Anything cool?
Cool? I don't know about cool. Is anything ever cool? I don't know. No, but life is good. We took a trip to Barcelona recently, a couple weeks ago.
And you got back into the country.
We got back into the country without incident. It was lovely to not be here. And just because nobody cares there. Nobody talks about it. It's just, you know, it's nice to take a little break. And we were very fortunate to be able to do that. And Barcelona is great. The beach in Catalonia is great. The monastery at Montserrat is like otherworldly, just like earth changing, life affirmingly awesome. And, you know, and then I came home and I got COVID. So, yeah, I'm fine. It's you know, when I get COVID, it's like I feel stoned, kind of like I'm like
tired.
I want
COVID. No, I'm just kidding.
And I'm out of it, you know. But I'm like, yeah, this isn't so bad. It's kind of good.
Okay,
you know?
Wait, hold up. Now let me ask you, because my dad recently got COVID. They took a trip. Like, my dad and stepmom took a trip. On the way home, he got COVID, and then she got COVID. But I know they took Paxlovid, and that helped. But he, you know, he was explaining that it was a really bad sore throat. So is that what you were experiencing in this one?
No, thank God, because I've heard that. I saw like the like razor blade throat symptom, and I'm like, I do not want that. No, I was very lucky. I had like, you know, I was congested for like a day, and then mostly I was just tired and brain foggy.
Interesting. How long
which
did
makes it
last?
Hard to write, but like about a week. It makes it hard to write. That's the problem. Like I can't sit down and focus on really on anything. So it's kind of just, you know, it's like a you throw a week into the abyss kind of thing. But, you know, whatever. I'm fine, and
I'm a little concerned because Bob went to his Star Trek convention. He was on a panel with like Mary Trump and all these really cool people. And so I know he was on a plane. I think it was on Monday. So hopefully everything is good. Hopefully he didn't bring COVID home with him, but we'll, we just have to wait and see. So I've never had it, by the way. Neither has
really.
He. Yeah.
Oh, maybe are people immune? I mean, some people.
I
must
think
be
sure.
Immune.
You know, I'm sure some people are, but I also think that we are, we've absolutely been out in crowds and, you know, like a couple of years ago, my sister got married and one of the days, you know, one of the things that the bridesmaids and everything did for her was like a big spa day. And oh my God, we went to this spa in Virginia and it was massive. And there were so many people there and I don't know if you've ever heard of these types of spas, but it was the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life. It was this massive building and there were all these different things you could do. And of course it was egregiously expensive, but I was like thinking, oh, we're probably all going to get COVID. And then no one did. So I don't know. Maybe I am immune. I don't know.
Hashtag winning, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. All right, let's swing this into some politics. And the first thing I want to talk to you about is Gavin Newsom, because no matter what anybody thinks of him as far as, you know, running for POTUS in 2028 or whatever, because he can be problematic in my opinion, but he's bringing it to this fight. And I just, you know, I don't know if he already had the press conference today. If he did, I missed it because I was busy doing other things. But I just wanted to kind of get your feel on what's happening with Newsom. I mean, he's taunting and trolling Trump with his all caps, you know, making fun of the way Trump talks, you know, speech and whatnot. So I know it's all about redistricting. So I just want to know, and the gerrymandering. So I want to know what your thoughts are here.
I mean, first of all, thank you for your attention to this matter. I think that has to be said.
Yes.
It's just, you know, I'm waiting for him to like do the meme where Trump is yelling at the lawn boy.
Yes. You know,
redistrict. Look, I just finished writing a piece and I've been reading a lot about, you know, Nazi Germany, because that's fun. Yeah. And, you know, sort of the rise of Hitler and the Nazis, especially in 1933, and how it happened, and not so much what Hitler did, but what people allowed him to do, and kind of the history of the vibes almost. And one of the things that they did not have was really any kind of strong opposition leadership. It just was a chaotic
mess.
Interesting.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. And we have that. And I think Newsom, you know, I'm not typically a huge fan of his, just not because he's bad, just, you know, how people sometimes rub you the wrong way.
Yes.
I don't know if it's the hair gel, but whatever. But he's, for the whole time, he's been playing the Trump thing very well. He's up for the fight. And that's what we need. We need people that are up for the damn fight. And it's not just him. He's the most, you know, front and center, I think, because of the social media. But it's also Pritzker in Illinois. My governor, Kathy Hochul, basically with the redistricting, said this is a war. That's what she said. So, you know, Nazi Germany did not have this kind of thing. We do. I think it's great. I think Mamdani is great. I think you can roll him into this whole, you know, kind of opposition force also. And that's something that we can get behind. And I think the governors specifically are so important because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Trump's lackeys control the DOJ and the FBI right now, right? These two, you know, Pam Bondi and Kash Patel, who he gave shares in his company to when he started the company, almost like he was pre-bribing them. And then he puts them in these positions of power. So the conflict of interest is off the charts, right? But they're never going to do anything. He's never going to get indicted for anything. None of them are. on a federal level.
Right.
So the only hope that we have for any kind of laws to be followed is the state laws, you know, mm-hmm. and California, New York, Illinois to a lesser degree. But, you know, these are places where we can nail them. Any kind of financial transaction that happens goes through New York. So theoretically, if it's a financial crime, New York state has jurisdiction to it mm-hmm. and can indict and can do all this stuff. So I feel like when the time comes, if the time comes, when we're going to really rally behind people and, you know, screw the impeachment, we need to arrest him.
Right.
Guys.
Yeah.
There's nothing yeah. that says we can't arrest him. He's a criminal, you know. But in order to do that, there needs to be an enforcement mechanism. And right now, there isn't mm-hmm. an enforcement mechanism, which I think is the single most dangerous and scary thing happening. You know, we have our side has no enforcement mechanism. They have now just allocated a tremendous yeah. amount of resources towards the stormtroopers of ICE. And that's, you know, that's really, really scary because they don't have anything to do that's useful. They're just going around terrorizing people, you know, for bonuses and stuff. So it's that's a problem. But to get back to your question, Newsom is great. And he on the social media, he referred to Ron DeSantis as the thirst queen.
That's fucking awesome.
I loved it so much. I can't even, right? It's so funny. You know,
I just filibustered in my pants.
It's so good. It's so good.
Sorry, I had to say that.
It's it's oh so good God, on so many awesome. Levels. I love it. Yeah. yeah. So so good for him because this is not like, you know, if all you do is go high, the opposition and the bad guys know right. you're going high. And yeah. then they can ambush you and do all these terrible things.
Yes.
If they don't know what you're going to do, and they see that you're willing to meet them where they are and take the battle to where they are. And, you know, we have to Malcolm X this stuff, man. Any means yeah. necessary. You know, this is really a dire situation that we're in. And that's it. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this. This is
oh,
bad.
Hell yes. And, you know, the thing is okay, I'm going to take Newsom, the governors, the ones that you mentioned, as well as just voters, the people, because right now, like we saw in Los Angeles, people stood up to ICE. Now, I wanted yes. to ask you, and they're standing up to ICE now in DC. And you told me that you're researching Nazi Germany. So was there anything like this going on? Was there a resistance on the ground to the Nazis?
I think, I mean, initially, no, you know, maybe at some point, but no. I think okay. a lot of what happened is that it just, you know, it came pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, Hitler took over in January 30th of 1933. So he had Trump has a 10-day head start if you're mm-hmm. going by, you know, parallels. And by, you know, April or May, they're already, you know, by April 1st, they're already like boycotting Jewish businesses and rounding people up.
Okay.
The Gestapo wasn't formed until April, I think, but, or May, but like, you know, Gestapo is a truncation of basically secret state police. That's what it means. And yeah. ICE is the secret state police. That's what they've become.
Right.
So I'm sure it said in this book that I read, which is called Defying Hitler by Sebastian Hafner. And I think everybody must read this book. It's so important. It's a memoir that he wrote in 1939 before the war. He's a guy from Berlin. He lived in Berlin and he's chronicling all this stuff that happened in, you know, in 1933. And they're just, you know, there wasn't the pushback. He said there were maybe individuals who stood up, you know, when, and he gave the example of one of the opposition people, whoever they weren't, I guess, the Gestapo yet, came into his house and tried to drag him away. He did try to shoot at them because he didn't know who they were, and they were in his house in the middle of the night, and that's what you do. But then they, you know, killed him and his family and a bunch of other people. So, but, you know, that's one guy standing up, not effectively. There was no comprehensive movement. There certainly wasn't anybody like Newsom mm-hmm. or, you know, Hochul or Mamdani or AOC or anybody like that mm-hmm. that was in any way functional. So,
well,
we
that's
that
promising. Yeah, yeah, that's promising.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, yeah. yeah. Okay, well, now I want to just completely switch the subject because I want to ask you, even though it's kind of related, but, you know, we are seeing these governors standing up, and governors are incredibly important. And then we've also got this resistance from just the people. And so there's the Democratic Party. I feel that the Democratic Party is still not totally united and have a cohesive, we're fighting down the fascist messaging. I think more and more are coming on board. And then we saw, I guess it was last week, that the Texas Democrats all walked out. And so just now, Democracy Docket is saying an Illinois judge denies Texas AG Ken Paxton's petition to enforce arrests against the Texas House Democrats in Illinois, ruling that Illinois lacks the authority to compel, blah, blah, blah. So we are seeing rulings against what Texas is trying to do. It's like Texas is just, oh my God, the leaders there are fucking insane. But I mean, we're seeing some backbone from the Democratic Party in Texas. And I'm wondering, my question here is, like, I just want to know what you think of the party altogether. And then also, do you think that these, whether it's Newsom or Pritzker or AOC or any of these people, in addition to some of these rulings against what Republicans are doing, do you think that it will, I guess, what's the word? Like, will it inspire more Democrats to kind of rise to that level? They're not all going to be Newsom, but, you know, they're as far as fighting back.
I don't know what they're going to. I have no ability to predict what somebody like Chuck Schumer is going to do, because they're playing the wrong. You know, there's that expression like the generals are always fighting the last war. Yeah. And that's what they're doing. Him and Hakeem Jeffries and Pelosi, and they're fighting the last war. Mm-hmm. That shit is over. It's done. Yeah. It's not 1997 anymore. This is not the same thing. We're not dealing with the quote unquote Republican Party. We're dealing right. with fascists, and you know they're functionally Nazis. Okay.
Yes, they are.
And you know, and right down to the Heiling and all that kind of stuff. So we have to act accordingly. We haven't done it. It's been mm-hmm. so goddamn frustrating, as yeah. you know, and we've talked about this, like, even throughout the presidential campaign and all of that. You know, just not enough. Like, you know, Biden, I think, for the first 3 years did a pretty good job as president, but mm-hmm. he didn't grasp the threat, I don't think.
No.
I don't think Obama grasped the threat. I think Obama still doesn't grasp the threat, honestly, of what could happen here.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. Assuming we get through this and mm-hmm. stave off the fascist incursion, which is not by any means a given. Mm-hmm. I think both parties are going to have to sort of fall apart and reconstitute. Mm-hmm. There needs to be two parties in the country that it's baked into our constitution. The government can't function. The federal government can't function unless there are two parties who are all in it, you know, pulling in the same direction for the country. And it hasn't been that way in a long, long time. We have one party that all they do is obstruct. They never do anything else. They do tax cuts and obstruction. Mm-hmm. That's all they do. And retrograde weirdo judges, you know, to try to, like, give them more power. That's not how democracy works. You know, even in the days of before the Civil War, it didn't work that way. So, yeah. You know, there's no excuse for it. But people refuse to see what's happening because they're just called the Republicans. And, you know, if you go into the Spanish Civil War, the Republicans were the good guys, you know, like it's, mm-hmm. It's a misnomer. Mm-hmm. It's not what it used to be. It's almost like, think of it like it's really, you know, they're zombies. It's a zombie Republican Party.
Yeah.
In that it's dead. It's been taken over by an evil corrupting force. And, you know, it that's it. It's not what it used to be. In the same way, I think RFK is a zombie. Like, yeah. you know, if you look, like, people who knew him and were friends with him are like, he changed. I think the brain worm got to him, and he's mm-hmm. literally just, he's not the same person anymore. He's just an evil zombie at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know when they're going to wake up. Like, we don't want to get to the point where they're like, arresting politicians who oppose Trump. We don't want to get to the point where there's violence, you know, where they're shooting people. We don't want to get to the point where they're having the National Guard guard all the election places, guard in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
or just, you know, mass arresting enough people in various purple districts on election day to make it so they can't. There's lots of ways that they can fuck with the vote without tampering with the machines.
Right.
They're in power. So all of this stuff, we have to assume they're going to do the worst and pretend that we're already there and act accordingly. Act accordingly.
Yay, fun.
Yeah, well, it can be fun, you know. I don't
Wow. You know, I mean, I part of this is, you know, I see so many people on social media expecting everything out of our Democratic leaders. And I understand that, you know, we've elected them and we expect certain things. And obviously, they are limited in what they can do legislatively. Obviously, what they would have to do is it's all about messaging and obstruction, which they're not always doing. But I also think it's really important to recognize that, you know, the voters, we're the ones who employ everybody. And I think we need to take, as voters, more responsibility. People just want to participate. And I mean, I'm talking to all the people out there right now who are probably already doing things. It's like half the country that's not even paying attention. But it's like even the voters that are listening, you know, you can't just show up to a midterm and show up to a general election and think I've done everything I can do, because right now there's so many other things we can do. Mark Elias is a good person to follow to keep up what's going on, but then you can follow like Indivisible, you can follow all these different groups, even Demcast. They have all kinds of actionable things where we need to keep, if we want the Democratic Party, I guess this is what I'm trying to say, if we want the Democratic Party to have more backbone, I think it's up to the voters to make them feel that way. Obviously, they have donors and they have things behind the scenes going on. But if they want to be reelected, if they want to feel secure, they need to feel the pressure from the voters. And so that's literally on us. I mean, I wish we had a better think tank and I wish we had better messaging. But I think it really boils down to, well, not only boils down to, but one of the big parts of it is, I think people just kind of only show up every once in a while. And then they expect our leaders to do everything, and they can't do everything because we're up against, as you know, whether it's Fox News and Newsmax, and then there's that whole, you know, machine, the right-wing machine online, and they're very, very organized. And what they do is they use human psychology, where I don't see Democrats doing that. I see Democrats, oh, we need to be hopeful. We need to be inspirational. And that's all fine and good, and I'm not putting that down. But I think our side needs a little bit more human psychology, because people are pretty simple and we're motivated mostly by fear. And I think that, you know, like Rachel Bitticoff is really good at telling everybody, hey, they're going to fuck you up. Here's how to fix it. And I would like to see more Democrats, you know, with that kind of behavior, whether you're a leader or a voter. So that's my take on that. But
well, I mean, I agree to some degree, but I feel like the whole Dems suck at messaging thing is a little bit overblown. I think the Democrats are fine at messaging. There's no media outlet that just does what the Democrats say all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a tremendous advantage with messaging because the Republican messaging is the same as
true.
The Fox messaging is the
yes.
same as the Newsmax
that
and all
true.
This Facebook shit. Now, you know, people want to know what to do. Most people have no fucking idea what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Like my poor mother is being driven insane by people my mother was never political ever until basically, you know, Trump took over this time. Uh-huh. And she's looking around. She lives in, you know, in New Jersey and people she's known for years, people in our family are just supporting the guy, but they don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And it drives her nuts. Like, because they just, you know, Fox is poisoning their brain. This one woman who she's known since elementary school is like, well, did you hear about these Democrats in Texas running away? What do you think of that? And my mom's like, well, you know, that's they're doing it because they're trying to prevent this very, you know, fascist thing. But what about, like, doesn't the Jeffrey Epstein stuff bother you? And this woman was like, who?
Oh, my God.
And, you know, which that's a level of ignorance that is staggering, because they even mention that QAnon mentions it, and Fox, I know, doesn't completely ignore. But like, anybody listening to this, don't assume that people know anything, because people don't know shit. it's, I remember Allison Gill, our friend, said at one of the events, I forget when that was, last year, the year before, you know, most people don't know who Roger Stone is, she said. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she's right. You mm-hmm. know, there's these little, people on our side who are actively online and all this stuff tend to get lost in the weeds a little bit with this guy and that guy and yeah. this connection and that connection. And that's all good. We have to keep doing that. But people don't know stuff like yeah. basic things. They don't know basic things. I think maybe that is also the Democrats' problem. They're right. out there like teaching like trigonometry and people don't know how to add and subtract yet.
That's so true. Oh my God. It's not that I want to bag on the Democrats, and the thing, and I just think though it would serve Democrats a little bit more to use human psychology in their messaging rather than, you know, I saw somebody said like, it's one, like Democrats want to be right, but we have to focus on winning. And I mean, yes, we have to explain to people why we're right. That's important, but we can't get so lost in only being right. We have to understand that, you know, people are moved by fear. If you're not afraid of what's going to happen, you may not show up to vote. You know, and it's all the degrees of how political you may be. If you're not political at all, that's okay. Let's just put them aside. But I mean, there's a bunch of people that would just like maybe show up to the elections before. Now, if you've shown up to the elections before, now you got to start calling. You got to add on to what you're doing. And I think that like the party, and then not just the party, because the party, they have their own specific job. Most of the messaging coming out of the Republican Party isn't coming from the party. It's coming from people like, not Roger Stone, but I can't think of the guy's name, but he's such a jerk. And he's like he's the one who does a lot of the messaging for them. And I just can't think of his name right now. And I'll think of it later. But either way, it doesn't matter because they put all this through think tanks. And I know Democrats have think tanks, but they're still not utilizing human psychology. And I think that we should, because that's what, you know, when you find out how to get to where people are living and fearful and let them know, here's what you could lose. I think they're more motivated to act than, you know, just the Democrats sending some inspiring message, which I'm not saying that's all they're doing, because they're not. They are. I'm seeing more punch with their social media. I'm seeing obviously Gavin Newsom and people like Pritzker and Walz and, you know, even Pete Buttigieg, who's just so calm and measured. I really do think that they, and of course I'm going to add AOC and Jasmine Crockett. All yeah. of them have their own individual style, but what they all do is come at this with some, you know, backbone. I don't want to say balls because it makes it sound patriarchal, but still, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah. And we, you know, but again, the other thing, I mean, it's hard to craft a message based on even a fear-based one like that, based on, you know, if these guys come, you're going to lose these three rights. Because what people say on their side, and I know this because this is what people in my family say, it's never going to happen. Right. He's never going to take away the gay marriage thing.
Yeah.
Well, what makes you say what delusional, yeah. you know, it's very easy until something happens to suggest otherwise, to just pretend everything's fine and everything's going to go away and both sides are the same and all that bullshit. And you know, you're relying on people's imaginations to imagine what would happen if, you know, Social Security went away or yeah. Medicare went away or, you know, your elderly grandmother has to suddenly move in with you because mm-hmm. the nursing home won't take Medicaid, whatever. All of these scenarios mm-hmm. that are very much in play,
yeah.
people cannot, I think they lack the ability for whatever reason. I blame the phones and the lack of emphasis on humanities, by the way. In the, you know, people, one of the things about reading a novel is you have to read it and imagine stuff. Sometimes right. imagining stuff is useful. What do you know? Oh my God, crazy.
Yes, this could happen. And yeah, obviously that's, and I agree with you. One of the things I saw Rachel Bitticoffer say, or she said this on my show, where she was like, I'm just going to say they're coming for your Social Security. And she goes, every time I do that, I, you know, somebody comes on and goes, well, actually, this is blah, blah, blah. And it's a Democrat explaining things and explaining how it's not that simple. And it's like, her whole thing is like, let's just be hyperbolic right now. We have to be hyperbolic because they are coming for our Social Security. And it may not happen with one kind of a piece of legislation, but over time, they will look to get rid of it. And so we just have to not worry about all the specifics. It's not to say that we have to lie, but it's just that we have to fight the way they fight. We have to do it with conviction and also honesty. But it just, you know, we have to make people believe. And you're right, though, because my aunt said to me the other day, and she's MAGA. I said that I have a friend who is suffering all kinds of disease and ailment. And, you know, she would be completely destroyed if Medicare was gone. And so my aunt said to me, oh, it's not going anywhere. I don't know what the fuck she hears on like Newsmax or whatever she listens to. And I wasn't at that point going to argue with her because it's absolutely pointless to try to debate her about anything. But, you know, I mean, that's the whole thing. But my argument against anybody else is Roe v. Wade, because all we heard all the time, and we even heard it from liberal men telling us, oh, they're never going to get rid of it because they want to, you know, use it to campaign and fundraise and all this. And it's like, well, they can. I knew it. They didn't need it as law to fundraise, because now they can fundraise on don't let the Democrats come back and make this legal again. So they always have an argument to fundraise. And it's so upsetting to see that so many people are just willing to go, oh, it's just going to go away. But it's like, no, it's not. Oh, my God. It's just, I don't know. Okay, I've got another question for you, and I'm slightly afraid to ask this, but you're the one who wrote it. And I want you to talk a little bit about what you wrote about Melania.
let's be very careful when we talk about Melania.
Yes.
You know, the reality about Melania is that she has been with Donald Trump since 1998. And in the most popular picture of Trump and Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, she's right there. Mm-hmm. She is sandwiched between Jeffrey and Donald in that photo, looking very dazed and confused, but she's there. She's photographed. There's a lot of pictures of her hanging out with these guys. Mm-hmm. At that time, I think she and Trump were not yet, you know, at the point in the relationship where they are now, you know, where they were apparent from what I saw based on my reading of the old tabloids and such, you know, they were with each other a lot. And, and therefore, when Epstein, was around and they were partying with Ghislaine, Melania was there.
Yeah.
So that's my only point. She's there.
Right.
Why? Nobody talks to her about it. Nobody asks her about it. No, there's no, why? I mean, she was there. Did she not know? Maybe, but I would like to know. And she, you know, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think that she's put out a statement condemning it or anything like that.
No, she hasn't. She's just suing anybody who wants to say anything about her.
Yeah. Which is, you know, makes me wary, but, I basically quoted her own book when I was talking about the things that you're not supposed to talk about. And I was like, I think if I quote Melania saying this, how can she come after me for,
right?
You know, like you said it yourself. But, you know, I don't find her very interesting generally. And heretofore I've ignored her because, frankly, it doesn't appear like she's around very much anyway. But she does. The reality is she does have some influence over Donald. He is afraid of her a little bit. And if she really wants something and she pushes for it, you know, she gets it.
Yeah.
She helped win him the election in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
After the Access Hollywood tape, she went on. And this is in the Mary Jordan biography, which is very good. She went on Anderson Cooper and, you know, basically made excuses for him. She did a campaign event in Pennsylvania. And he barely won. So without that, I mean, we don't have a counter, you know, there's no way to know for sure, but she helped him win.
Yeah.
And right now also, she has the power to take him down.
Yeah.
So why doesn't she, you know? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. It may be that they're just simpatico, you know, in terms of their level of evil and greed. That seems to be the case.
That does. It does seem to be the case.
But I've never met her, so I don't know. Although she's not much older than me, and she hung around in the same places in New York that I, like, she kind of
was crazy
where I was a lot. for, you know, a very short period of time when she first moved to the city in 1996, and not 1995. Let's be clear. 1996. Mm-hmm. We don't want to ever make that mistake. So yeah, it's strange. The whole thing is very weird with her, but I think she needs to be put in the spotlight a little bit. Why is she given a free pass about the Epstein stuff?
Well, because
I'm not saying she did anything wrong.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not accusing her, but she was there.
Yeah. She saw it. Yeah.
You know, what did you think of the guy?
Right.
What did you think when Donald kept hanging out with him all the time? You know, what you're suing Hunter Biden about this thing, but tell us your side of the story. You know, if that's not like, why would he say that? Why would Epstein have said that if it's not true? Like, is he just trolling? Like, what? Why do you think he would say it? Like, I would like her to answer questions, like not questions that would get her in trouble with the law, just questions that would, you know, make the whole situation become clearer to those of us trying to parse through it.
Yeah. And I mean, well, obviously the oligarch owned media is leaving her alone. And, you know, unless there's somebody who has the, you know, power to do that or decide, you know, maybe I wish Lawrence O'Donnell, but I mean, would she even sit down or allow them to ask her those questions? I mean, where the fuck is she? She's never.
She doesn't
around.
Have to. She doesn't right. have to. I mean, I wouldn't have for her either. But you know, but people. I mean, if pressure is put,
right,
maybe something will come out of that. Yeah. You know, did you know she has an older sister? Did you know?
I think I did through your writing.
Yeah,
but that's only through your writing.
Yeah, she's an older sister, 2 years older, who's always been with her wherever she's gone.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, she's a strange person. And I mean, I've had my theories and I've wondered about her. And, you know, I mean, I wondered about the Epstein thing. Well, it wasn't so much Epstein in the first term, but, you know, just to be careful and not, you know, I don't want to. But certain things that I wondered were immediately smacked down by certain people because they just hated her. And I feel like, you know, when you take a look at somebody like Melania or any of them, like Ghislaine as well, like somebody, okay, like here's the best way to describe it. I saw somebody run the theory that maybe Ghislaine was groomed and ultimately became the bad person. Now, I'm not saying she was or she wasn't or anything. I have no idea. This was just some rando on social media going, maybe this happened. And so the thing that I see so much on social media and the reactions to something like that is, well, she's just horrible and I don't care. And I feel like if I were a doctor or like a psychologist and I were taking a look and interviewing her, it wouldn't be from this emotional point of view where I hate her and I feel like, you know, she abused children, blah, blah, blah. I would want to come from, you know, take emotion out of it and have no judgment. People can't seem to do that. It's interesting because right now on Netflix, there's a show called Conversations with Jeffrey Dahmer. And so it was the woman who was in charge of that case. And she described herself kind of like Starling from Silence of the Lambs. And she's like, you know, I had to go in there with no judgment. And I just had, she goes, sometimes I felt like I was his sister. Sometimes I felt like I was mother. Sometimes I felt like I was his therapist, but she couldn't judge him. And, you know, you listen to what that person says. And of course what he did was horrible and evil, but then there was a psychology behind it. And so there is a psychology behind Ghislaine. There is a psychology behind Melania. I don't know if we're ever going to know for sure if any of them were groomed or victims, but if they were, that doesn't excuse any kind of behavior. It just maybe points like psychologically to how our brains work. And I just think it's interesting. And I was wondering about that in the first term. And again, most people wanted to shoot me down because they just hated her and they just wanted to write her off as evil. And it's like, hey, yeah, she is evil. I'm not going to argue that. But like, was she born that way? Was she fucking born evil? Or did she come? You talked about her family and her father is very much like Trump. There's all kinds of things that are weird and iffy in her story. And so I don't know where it all comes from, but the end result is her behavior is abhorrent and it's awful. And yes, she's disgusting, but I don't know. I think it's kind of fascinating. Like what makes women, I know patriarchy and all that, but like what makes women like them go along with this? In some of these reports, Ghislaine was molesting these girls as well. So it's like, I mean, I don't know. Like, again, was she born this way? And I know that some people don't give a shit, but I just, from a human psychology point of view, these are the people that are ruling our conversations and thoughts today. So I don't know. I'm just kind of curious and throwing that out there, that it's not always about we have to hate them and then close the door. Sometimes it's interesting, like listening to these conversations with Jeffrey Dahmer gives you an insight into his head. And the crazy thing about him, just a quick little sidetrack, is that of all the serial killer crap that I've ever seen, he's the only one that says, I don't know why I had this compulsion. I knew it was wrong. I didn't have any empathy. And I did these horrible things, but he didn't like that he did them. And the fact that he didn't like that he did them, it wasn't strong enough to overcome the compulsion to do them. And he did fucking unbelievably horrible. Oh my God. But he wasn't coming from, like Richard Ramirez, who was another serial killer, he seemed to just be coming from evil. He was fucking evil. Jeffrey didn't come across, I mean, the things he did was evil, but he was like, and he said, I need to stay in jail. Because if you let me out, I'm going to do it again. And I just thought it was fascinating. So anyway, I wish there was some way we could psychologically observe these women. You know what I mean? And find out, like, what makes you behave this way to stay with these people? Are you fearful? Have you just become so hardened? Was this in you already? I don't know. So thank you for letting me go off on that rant. But it was just, something I've been wondering about.
The other thing, the thing with Ghislaine, you have to remember, is also she's a liar. She perjured herself constantly.
Yes.
And I know somebody who met her before. She's a name dropper. You know, she's like, my dad. She's one of those people.
Yeah.
So you could just throw that into your analysis of the psychology. As for Melania, I mean, you know, she grew up in communist Yugoslavia. Yeah. So you have to give her slack for that, because that's a very, very different upbringing,
right,
where things, where, you know, money and nice stuff is much harder to come by. And, you know, it's a whole different thing. And remember, she did not leave Slovenia to go model in Milan and Paris until she was like 22. She wasn't like a 14-year-old doing stuff. She was older. You know, not that that says anything one way or the other, but that is objectively a fact. So, you know, that she did do some modeling with her mom, you know, when her mom would bring her places, but nothing like, you know, going to Casablanca or something like that. Like even like what Ivanka did. So, just something to keep in mind.
Well, and the last thing I just want to say, tying into the Epstein thing. So when this whole, let's go back to June, where Elon Musk said Trump is in the Epstein files, right? So he throws this out there, and it kind of brings the conversation. I don't know when it really, really took fire, sometime in July. It started with that spark, I think, and then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then what we were seeing is people like Candace Owens and even Steve Bannon freaking out, saying, you know, wait a minute, you said that there were files and now you're saying there's no files, and are you lying to us? And it seemed as if MAGA was starting to turn on Donald Trump. But when we look at his approval numbers right now, they haven't dropped. So with the Republican Party. So I kind of thought about this, you know, I thought, I don't know, because what they're going to do is they're going to figure out a way, and this is what they're doing right now. They're going to take all, you know, Donald's name out, and they're just, and Keith Edwards had a very viral post that said something like, you know, they're only going to name Democrats and a few billionaires. And then they're just going to, and they're going to make Ghislaine a victim and all of that. So of course that's what they do. And I figured they would. And I figured that MAGA would basically eat it up. But the thing is the Epstein thing isn't going away. Because there are, you know, you can't just say it's Democrats. I think it's more than just Democrats, because there's all these independents in the mix as well. So there are all these people who are, I mean, Democrats are, or I should say the left is keeping this alive. But my question to you is, initially everybody, you know, people were thinking, is this going to be the thing that divides MAGA? And it doesn't look that way. So how do you think, where do you see this going in any particular direction? Do you see it? I mean, I don't think no one's ever going to get arrested for this, at least not during this regime. But I mean, do you see this hurting Donald Trump or the Republican Party?
Well, I mean, it's pretty awful. And remember, QAnon made the Epstein thing a major part of its entire PSYOP. So the QAnon faction of MAGA does not like this and will continue to not like it for as long as there's no files released. The guy was at the best case scenario for Trump is that he was best friends for 15 years with the most notorious child sex trafficking rapist, maybe of all time, and allowed him to use Mar-a-Lago to steal, that's his word, steal, girls for him to sex traffic and rape. That's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but somebody wrote this on Blue Sky in response to something I wrote about this, and I can't remember who it is, and I apologize, but the person said, you realize if this doesn't take him down, nothing ever will, and it's over. And that's true. Mm-hmm. If there's proof that you're like in cahoots with the child sex trafficking rapey guy and you're raping girls and nobody cares, that's it. We're done as a society. We might as well just put a fork in it. So I think that, you know, to your point about messaging, Dems can't let it go. Mm-hmm. Independents can't let it go. Women can't let it go. And mm-hmm. guys can't let it go either, because it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, will anything come out of it? I don't know. I don't know if the midterms are going to be fair or not. I don't even know if there's going to be a presidential election in 20. Who knows what's going to happen down the line. But Trump doesn't like this. It stresses him out. And, you know, sooner or later, you know, I wish I had written it. Somebody wrote, what was it? Clots and prayers, you know? Sooner or later, he's going to have a you know, quarter pounder with cheese that's going to do the trick. And, you know, the stress exacerbates that. So,
yes, exactly.
You know, and I'm, that's going to be, I just want to be alive when that happens. It's going to be a great day.
Well, a lot of people, many people are saying, Greg, many people are saying, there seems to be this kind of thing that I hear, no matter who I talk to, people do not believe he's going to make it this entire term. Some people will say they don't think he's going to make it this year. Some people, including me, I always said, I've been repeating this over and over, but when it was between Trump and Biden, I didn't think either one of them was going to make it for 4 years. Because the stress of the presidency is so grand. And obviously, the stress that Donald Trump feels is so different than somebody like Biden, because Biden cares. Trump's stress comes from, you know, it's coming from Epstein, it's coming from different places, but it's still a very stressful job, no matter whether you're corrupt or not. So, yeah, I believe that his, you know, unhealthy diet and unhealthy ways, clearly the guy, he's got the cankles and all that, he's not well. So I guess we're just going to have to wait and see, because I don't want to call it a sentiment, but people don't think he's going to last. So we're all just kind of waiting. Every day we wake up, every day I wake up and I look at my phone and I'm like, did it happen?
No, but is today the day?
Today the day. But I know you got to go, and I'm just so grateful that you give me any time. I love talking to you. So before I let you go, please tell everyone where to find you.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's always great to catch up and hear your thoughts on all the stuff that's happening, all this crazy. I just, every day, by the way, you see, we wake up and that every day I shake my head and I'm like, I cannot believe that this is happening. I cannot freaking believe that
every
we're
day.
In this position every day. It's so baffling that, like, you know, that Pete Hegseth is in charge of it. It's just, all of it is crazy, crazy, crazy. But, you know, here we are. I am on Substack. You can find me at Substack at gregoliar.substack.com. I have a bunch of books you can go buy. You can find them wherever books are sold, although you're going to have to ask the booksellers to order them because they don't usually stock my stuff.
Okay.
I have a podcast on the excellent Mueller She Wrote podcast network. And you can find me Friday nights at 8 p.m. On YouTube Live with my friend Stephanie Koff, a.k.a. LB. And that's where I'm at. And of course, I'm on Blue Sky and Twitter.
And all over. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Well, I have all of your bona fides, or at least some of your bona fides, in the description of the Patreon. So thank you, Greg, again, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyo from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.